With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Please note that the show Shining Girls includes portrayals of gender-based violence, sexual assault, and gore, and our podcast coverage discusses these topics. Resources for Rain and Wava are included in the show notes. Take care.
Welcome back to Post Show Recap's coverage of Shining Girls. My name is Grace. I'm here with my co-host, Melissa. Melissa, how are you doing?
Doing good, Grace. How are you doing?
Good. We watched another episode of Shining Girls. Amanda is also here. Dr. Amanda, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. We're like learning more pieces of this mystery puzzle. So, I'm doing well.
Did I see there was, I mean, we've only watched two out of the three episodes that have dropped. But I saw you retweet an Apple TV tweet today that perhaps there's some clues. I think that I realized that there's a lot of clues in the intro, I think, as well. But
yeah. It's a good thing Melissa wrote the list of nouns.
My random list of nouns.
Yes.
Yeah. No, there was that. Yeah, there seemed to be some more clues accumulating. And I retweeted one of Apple TV's tweets with the one word question, clones, question mark. I don't know that.
Oh, yes.
I don't know that we're going to clones yet, but I like the idea that I'm just this person who always assumes that it's clones. And that's my new brand. I'm the clone person.
It does seem like poetic justice of some kind that clones would be in Shining Girls and not Severance.
Yeah, that would be hilarious. Yeah, that would be good. Yeah, the tweet was look again the radium. I don't know. We've only watched two, so maybe I just completely spoiled myself because I saw this tweet before I watched episode two, and then that box is like, okay, I get it. But
yeah,
look again though, the radium. Yeah. Fun episode, I thought. I mean, fun. Very dark and grim. The idea last episode we got that idea of like, is there something inside of Julia? Mm-hmm. And now we're learning that perhaps Harper has a little bit of like he's like kind of playing games, it seems like, with the people who might be trying to find him in the form of, you know, leaving things around and behind. And yeah.
So. Like his calling card, like the wet bandits in Home Alone. You have to have a calling card.
Yeah, it's true.
I watched this episode having completely forgot every character's name. So all of my notes are like reporter, creepy guy. I just call him Creep throughout all of my notes.
Yeah.
Well, that's maybe you're just trying to live vicariously through Kirby, who every time she like, wakes up or moves, doesn't know anybody's name. People don't exist. So, you know,
is Harper named yet? Like, I know we know his name. So, yeah. So creepy guy, I think, is the most accurate way to refer to him at this juncture, Melissa.
There we go. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. The episode's called, as you mentioned earlier, document Evergreen. I don't know. Do you have thoughts on the episode title? If we do, I don't want to spoil what we'll talk about later, but I'm not sure I really get the episode title, but
I mean, it's referring to the green of the decaying, like, radioluminescence of the radium, right?
So, oh yeah, okay, and it stays okay. Yes. Yes,
there, yeah, so. Yeah. There's that tie-in, the green radium luminescence, and then it's also this idea that it's like, and Harper says this, it's like, I'm always there, I'm everywhere, I'm always, it's, you know, and Kirby's, you know, it's all the time. So I think that there's this like sense again, like there's a lot of these like time references, and when you think of evergreen, it's something that's sort of everlasting and always relevant. So. Yeah.
I mean, I'm from the Pacific Northwest, so I assumed it was just like a shout out to me personally.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, last episode we talked about, you know, like, why is he doing that? I think it's, you know, a little bit of indication. I think he likes sort of this cat and mouse game that he somehow can time travel and can be leaving these clues that nobody will ever understand. I think certainly seems to be a part of it. And now I'm most interested in right now, how is he time traveling? Because he seems to be a pretty powerful individual to be able to like time travel. Yeah. At will, perhaps.
Yeah.
Whenever he wants. That's powerful.
Yeah.
He'd be like the most powerful Marvel superhero. Villain. He's a villain.
Yeah, he would be a villain, I think.
Yeah. 100%. It does sort of feel like it's the whole, like, this is his radioactive spider bite has given him the ability to time travel and assault women that way, which is kind of horrifying. It's a little bit weird. I'm hoping there's more to it than that. That it's not just like, really, oh, by the way.
He should really be like investing in the stock market too, you would think, while he's at it. It's yeah, pretty limited application of this immense power, Grace, as you pointed out.
Get the sports almanac like Marty gets from 1985.
Right,
come on.
Right.
Bet on the gambling. Bet on the sports. Bet on the gambling.
It's fine.
It may sound like noise to you, but your kids are gonna love it.
Try it. All right, should we jump into the episode? We'll jump into the recap.
I think we should make more Back to the Future references first.
Well, I don't think we'll be done. I don't think we'll be done. So we see Kirby writing in the or so she's with Marcus, and she's like, where's Rachel? And he's like, you didn't invite your mom. And he's like, where's all the stuff? And the door, someone knocks at the door, and it's Marcus's birthday, so they're having a party.
This is like the worst situation to be like, so she's like getting her bearings, and all of a sudden she's hosting a party for the husband that she just has only now realized that she has. This is like nightmare scenario under the best of circumstances.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, she sort of like barely holds it together this whole time, and you know, later Marcus will say that she ruined his birthday, and it's like, yeah, but she didn't just like scream and kick everybody out either, which I sort of feel like would have been justified at that point.
This was very Severance, right, Melissa? Like somebody just like coming to in a situation. Like this was very much like the innies waking up on the outside right here.
Yeah. And she has to like pick all the context clues, right? Mm-hmm. Where she's trying to like figure out what's going on here. And I thought the touch that was neat was the I've forgotten her name because apparently I can't remember anyone's name in the show. But the one coworker who hadn't remembered her name before and was all like that she mentioned moving, and that one like came in and instantly knew her name. So it was just like very much this different vibe with her work colleagues than she has in the other timeline that we've seen.
Yeah, the most interesting thing, and it's most noticeable, I think, later when like Dan will be talking to her about things that they very clearly have like never talked about, that like everybody else is, this is their reality, right? That like these two are married. There's clearly like, you know, interactions that have happened, but they work together. And like, yeah, she's seeing this picture of Kirby and Marcus, like them at their wedding. And so he's like, is everything all right with you two? Like, this is their reality. It's very interesting. To me. Yeah,
a nice detail here was like, you know, she sort of like all the attention goes to Kirby, and the it's like time for her to say something, and like her little happy birthday speeches. I don't know how I got here, and being married to you just doesn't seem real. Happy birthday.
Yeah, I wrote this line down too, because it was like, it sounds sweet. Maybe, but also she means like, I don't know you. I'm like, this is weird.
I really think actually that there's ways in which I always think that the best dramas are funny and the best comedies mm-hmm. can like make you cry and can be dramatic. And I do think that the show has been funny through two episodes, but so dryly, like so yeah, like yeah. it's just almost like sad funny. Like the way that she's like, I don't know how I got here. I can't, you know, it doesn't even seem real that I'm married to you. Happy birthday. Like it's so sad. Yeah. And yet it's very funny. To me anyway.
Yeah. And again, like another, you know, brilliant Elizabeth Moss acting scene where she's yeah. like walking that line between clearly being like disoriented and overwhelmed, but like trying to hold it together enough that like people are probably like, okay, something's a little off with her, but she's like her entire reality is just completely shifted. And she is holding it together enough and like giving this speech as if it's like a sweet sort of choked up thing and not a like, who the hell are you? Why am I here?
Yeah. It's very, very strong. She heads into her room. She looks in her notebook. And again, this like altered reality, it says lives with your husband, Marcus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did find it funny that she, you know, just like reaches under the mattress and pulls out this notebook, like nothing, everything else is different. She's not in the same apartment. She's not living with the same person, but like, she knew exactly where to find that notebook when she went
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
A lot of her things remain. Like when she, when her desk moves, like it is still this, the Godzilla mug, although it's not being used to like catch the leak. It like has her pens in it. Like a lot of the stuff in the apartment is the same stuff from her apartment before. It's just that she, it's in 3B right. instead of 2B. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And have either of you seen the film Memento?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's sort of, I mean, which is actually like a reasonable depiction of amnesia. And it sort of, you know, reminds me of like, we've talked about how much is this like map onto anything that's like sort of neurologically plausible, but like, it almost seems like she's developed these habits and you do train people who have amnesia to like develop these habits. So even if they don't remember like that they have a memory book, they just sort of develop this habit of I go to my side table when I need to find something and then they can look in there for information. And how in Memento he sort of trains himself to like look at his tattoos to get the information he needs. So it sort of reminded me that she has this habit of like, okay, I look under the mattress. I looked at the other details here that she had written down. And this comes up again. I think Wicker Park is a neighborhood in Chicago. So that's where she lives. We see again, like the address, but this time it says unit 3B. And she has some basic, you know, notes, lives with Marcus and, you know, where the bedroom is. And I was like, and I started thinking like Grendel is a very specific name for a pet. Yes. So mm-hmm. I did do a quick little Google on Grendel. And Grendel is a character in the epic poem Beowulf, which is not, I mean, I've heard of Beowulf, but I'm not very familiar with this work. He's one of the poem's three antagonists, all aligned in opposition against the protagonist, Beowulf. Grendel is feared by all. He's depicted as a monster or a giant. So it's like, kind of a fierce name to like give to your, you know, sweet little house cat or, mm-hmm. you know, dog. So I wonder if that's going to be like thematically relevant.
Yeah. A descendant of Cain, described as a creature of darkness, exiled from happiness and accursed of God, the destroyer and devourer of humankind.
Yeah.
Cheery.
Huh. Yeah.
I hadn't thought about
it. It was
dog
between
later.
That and Marley. It was,
no, Marley's too sad. We can't do Marley.
Yeah.
Because so later when she's talking about this, she'll mention being walking by the beach, I think, and then with her dog. And she's kind of describing like everyone was there and then suddenly I was alone, which I think is, you know, clearly some creepy creep guy shenanigans. Who knows? But I did sort of wonder, like she was very insistent on this idea that she was like walking her dog.
Mm-hmm.
And so like what happened to that dog? Is there like some, you know, the show is dark enough. We don't need to
right
go too far down that road. But it did make me wonder if like the nuance or like the lack of like fixed consistency around the pet was in somehow because of like the dog being there at the time and you know.
It's certainly the thing. I mean, you talked about the items are not changing. the pet is changing between a dog and a cat. That's interesting to me. And also, I just realized she was at the beach. Last episode, he's like, wow, you picked the one place in Florida doesn't have a beach. That would make some sense. Oh,
interesting.
Yeah. Don't pick a beach. Somebody also asked perhaps if her license, because last episode she checks her license and thought there might have been a Florida license, which I feel like, the show feels like, yeah, it's set in Chicago and it's telling us so, it's like so often.
So hard.
We are in Chicago. Like, this is Chicago.
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 I meant to go back and look at the license. I didn't do it. And I was like, oh, maybe one of them did it, but none of us did it. We can look for next time. We're also potting tomorrow. But I was wondering, like, because is it an Orlando, like, the, I think in the Discord, the question was, is it an Orlando address? And I know that it says Auckland Unit B in her notebook. And I was wondering, did that look like Orlando? Like,
yeah, quickly? It could be.
But I definitely will go back and interrogate the license.
Yeah, I think it's a good point about the dog comes up in the story.
Right, because you don't walk a cat. Like, so was the dog Grendel? Like, or, you know, is that the dog? Is this a different dog? It's a really interesting question.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we get our intro. I think that writing down the list of nouns was correct, because they're definitely the tin can is in the intro. So I think there's clues as to perhaps what he is, like, leaving, the things he's leaving behind, tormenting these people. I think there's definitely clues in the intro. Yeah. I didn't write
listeners should
down.
Send us more nouns. As I was watching, I was like trying to write them down, and I wrote down, you know, a fraction of what all was in there. So send us nouns.
Not just any, not like Matt, don't let Mad Libs this. Like, pause the show.
I just want the nouns.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All the
nouns. No articles, no adjectives, no prepositions. No. We're only in the market for nouns right now.
That's right. This is Noun Town. That's the name of our new point. So Dan's at the arcade. He meets Howard. Any place to go meet the
Where the coroner hangs out. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Actually,
coroner arcade.
Side fun fact, there is a technical difference between a medical examiner and a coroner.
Okay.
Medical examiners went to medical school. Coroners are elected officials that didn't necessarily have to go to medical school. I think it's very different, like, county by county. I did go down a bit of a rabbit hole once trying to understand this U.S. system that I'm not a part in. But anyway, he is a medical examiner, and they refer to him as an ME. So he is
has an MD. And then they make a point of showing diplomas and credentials on the wall too. Yeah.
Not that I think it's relevant. That was just my fun fact.
No, it's great.
Yeah.
All the more reason that Iris should have known better.
Yeah, that's right.
With her anatomy terms. Yeah, I like this. So Dan, you know, kind of is making, you know, medical examiner small talk. I saw last night's crime stats, and he's like, the first week, Howard says, the first week of spring, the asters bloom and people kill people. And that actually is true, that the homicide rates are higher in, first of all, they're higher in warm weather climates than they are in cold weather climates, and they are higher in warm weather months.
That's so wild.
People
Do
go
we know
out-
why?
I mean, the theory is that, you know, when it's cold, people stay inside, and actually, rates of suicide are higher in the cold winter months. And then when it's warm outside, people go outside and see other people, and it puts them in a homicidal rage, something like that.
Yeah, that adds up. That tracks. It's too hot. Yeah, he's asking about Howard's read on this on the girl that he brought in. She was fine with it until she wasn't. Dan wants to know, did her wounds match Julia's? It's hard to tell. Her scars are old. And Dan's asking for the autopsy report, which because the police have made an arrest, they'd have to release it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. We get pretty great. He's like, nothing else inside of her. And he does end up showing him the report. He brings him back down.
Yeah. This is the part I didn't understand. He's like, show me the autopsy report. And it's like, I can't do that. But here's this box full of photos and information
I imagine that some of it probably gets turned over to the state and is official state's evidence. And you can't have access to that because that's part of a legal case. I mean, it doesn't seem, but that whatever else was left was not state's evidence, that's going to be used in that case. And so I can sort of see that the actual report, can't, because if it goes to the press and gets leaked or whatever, that that could be a problem. But, you know, Dan is, you know, he's always on. It seems like, you know, Dan says that people like him.
Yeah.
I'm not getting a lot of evidence of people like Dan, but he does seem to always have a decent relationship with the medical examiner, whether it's Howard or Iris. And they go back to the morgue together and likely have like the box of stuff that was found, I guess, in and around the body.
Yeah, that's the take that I took was that like Howard's like, yeah, like I'm not supposed to show, like, yeah, not really. And then because Dan kind of is like, yeah, did I do something you missed? He's like, okay, fine, like come. Like, and he does say, there's like when he's like, wants to take a picture or something, he's like, and the whole thing is like, none of this can be reported. Like, you can come see it, but like none of it can be reported.
Right.
Yeah, so they're talking about the, you know, the this interesting line about like the cousin was the one to come in and identify her. The dad wasn't do it. She was dragged. They search inside. There wasn't anything there. They do find this tin box, which is radium ore. And Dan takes a picture of it. And
yeah, radium ore from Midway Chemical Company, and it's been out of business since the 1950s. So Howard says it's been down there longer than she has.
Yeah.
And he mentions that she had kind of bruising consistent with having been dragged really far. She had a C3 fracture, so that's the cervical three. That's like basically in your neck. It's kind of the third.
Vertebrae.
Thank you. He points out that the ribs were still intact. There's nothing inside. He kind of did a search, but then there's like this tin nearby, I guess. And so it was that there was this radium there. But I did love this whole exchange where he goes, are you up for it? I know you're a delicate soul. Mm-hmm. And then when he starts to open it and Dan goes to turn off the light, but it looks like he's turning away. He's like, away. He's like it, yeah. Come on, you asked me for this. And he seems like all annoyed.
Yeah. But he spots the glow in the dark radium.
Yeah, glow in the dark body cavity. So he says, yeah, the uranium was inside of her. So that's the conclusion. So we know that this is something that is like very old from the 1950s and that apparently it was inside the body for some period of time for the 2 years before it was found.
Yeah. So I did look this up. So radium isn't normally green. I was kind of curious about this. So pure radium is kind of a silvery white, but when it decays, it does create this kind of byproduct and that can be radioluminescent. Mm. So, and have kind of these fluorescent chemicals. I thought it was weird that he just sort of like very quickly like turned off the light and knew what to look for there, but whatever. But anyway, radium was discovered by Marie and Pierre Curie. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the thing that partially, you know, led to their death, which is not great. So it's a dangerous thing we're dealing with here.
Mm-hmm.
This whole thing. So I mean, the other piece of this whole thing, right, is that this pipe had been closed for 50 years, right, is the thing that Dan notices. And so Julia had been missing for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Right. So, but my best guess, right, is that like he travels back in time to put her there so he doesn't get caught and then, you know, leaves her there.
If that had been the case, then the body decay we'd be dealing with would be like significantly different than 2 years. So yeah, I don't know. Cause I had that same thought too, where I was like, oh, that must've been how like more time travel shenanigans. Mm-hmm. I'm like, but that doesn't totally track. I feel like then we would have had some comment about, you know, the atypical level of decay or something.
It's interesting though, that's like that they know that pipe has been sealed up for 50 years. And now we know that there's this artifact from the 1950s or earlier that's with the body. So that seems like a specific detail that they mentioned how long the pipe had been sealed up, you know, like why give that level of specificity in that brief exchange? So I think it's definitely something to just kind of track.
So if the pipe had been sealed, if he can time travel and time travel people with him, then theoretically he could time travel back before the pipe when the pipe is open, go in, time travel into the future, leave her there, time travel back. Like, it's convoluted, but I feel like that's But yeah, maybe I'm totally wrong.
I'm going to need a whiteboard for this.
Yeah, it just that the I'm totally with you with this idea of like kill her in the present, time travel back with the body, dump it in the pipe that you know is going to be sealed up for 50 years.
I feel like that's like
either it's like an oversight or we're missing a piece of the puzzle, which is probably very likely two episodes into the show.
Yeah. So we do see Harper, our bad guy, walking. He heads into what looks like to be sort of like an abandoned house. And
yeah, it's like a row home. Like it looks like the upper floors have like boarded up windows.
Yeah.
Or as my notes say, we see creepy guy walk into a house.
Yes. He unlocks the door. He has keys. He reads the paper. He sees the piece about Julia. He's like, when he sits down, he has a mug. He sips from it, puts it down. The next time he drinks from it, it's a different mug.
It's a different mug. Yeah.
Yeah. So he went from drinking like coffee out of a mug to what I think is tea out of like a teacup.
Yeah, I took a lot of I paid a lot of attention to this scene because I was wondering. Well, first thing like I noticed, and I don't think we've mentioned this about Harper yet, is that his like style of dress is like very nondescript. Like it could be something from the 1950s or it could be something from the 1990s. Like the way that he dresses is sort of like doesn't really call to any time, like his haircut and everything would like look in place in different mm-hmm. time periods. Mm-hmm. I was looking for clues in his house, like the appliances, to try to see if like they were modern, if like this was like a 90s blender or like a 60s 70s blender, and the appliances are sort of older looking, but this is also like obviously could just be like a home that has not been well maintained. What he's holding a newspaper that he's reading, and I stopped on all of the newspaper shots to see if I could get clues about the date. And I was wondering if when the mug shifts, if like the newspaper time might also shift along mm-hmm. with that. So this is what I learned from the newspaper. The headlines were there were some things like project depends on $190 million dollar break, how electricity subsidies work, developer takes off on new tracks. So all of that stuff was kind of local stuff that was hard to confirm. But then I saw Bush unveils aid plan for ex-Soviet republics.
Well, which Bush?
Yeah, no, well, and yeah. So I did look that up. This would be 1992.
Yeah.
So that does map on to 1992.
I don't think George W. Bush was doing much with this.
There's
Soviet era.
So there's also Caterpillar vows I wrote something wrong, but it was about a Caterpillar strike. So there was a Caterpillar strike in 1992. There were like a few Caterpillar strikes. And then when he turns to
Can we explain Caterpillar? Because I'm thinking the insects.
Oh, sorry. So Caterpillar is
imagining little insects with picket signs. That's what I'm imagining.
They all went on strike in the US. It was crazy, Grace. It was in the 90s. And they were like, we're not turning into butterflies.
We won't be butterflies.
No more cocoons. So yeah, Caterpillar is like that company that makes those construction vehicles,
okay,
right?
Got it.
And they had a union that went on strike in the 90s a few different times. So those headlines map onto 1992. And then on the page where it's the story about Julia, like we think that's the story that Dan has just written, Dan Velasquez. And the other headline on that page is that the O'Hare Guard unit is home from the Mideast, and there was Chicago O'Hare. There was a guard unit that was held hostage in the Mideast that was released. So everything kind of maps on to like 1990s. And Jefferson Park woman fatally stabbed is a story about Julia. So that's probably a deeper dive than I needed to do.
I think it's worth doing. I think it's fun. It's interesting.
Yeah.
So we didn't see this man we've never seen before. And it finds out that Harper is the one talking to him. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it wasn't until Contigny that I heard a horse scream. No, the dogs would bark first. I was very confused by this scene. And then the guy's like, I'll stop if I've told you this before. Harper says, we have to stop anyway. She's just coming in now. Has to go. He's like, how do I look? Are you here to see Julia? Harper's like, yeah, she's not my girl. Not this time. I'll see you, Leo. What is this about? Who's Leo?
I was super confused by this scene. Melissa, do you have anything?
No. So yeah, Cantigny was the first major battle of World War One. I looked that up. Later, Julia will refer to Harper's gig line, which is like the straight line of buttons down to belt buckle.
Yeah,
that is a part of like military dress. So mm-hmm. there's like some connection there, and I thought, okay, if like time is weird, could this guy have fought in World War One and like time traveled to the present, and he's like recalling this memory? I don't know.
We do get the time like that. The year is 1990 here, so obviously this is, and this seems to be like a residential home,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Because this is where Julia comes to see her social work client. So whoever this mm-hmm. Leo is that's talking to Harper is for some reason in this residential home.
How many years has radium been out? Like, they haven't used. So we know that the pipe is 50 years old, which would put
they
it.
They had said that radium hadn't been around since the 50s. That was like, it's 50s. Kind of that same timeline.
Mm-hmm. And then 50 years, the pipe would be mm-hmm. like 42. I guess World War One. I mean, this guy definitely, I mean, I feel like he's creepy enough to be like, yeah, I'll go watch the war, you know, like, you know, like, yeah, like, I could go to the movies tonight, or I could go watch World War One. I go watch Cantigny and he watches yeah. like, the horse get killed, you know, that feels like Harper's, you know, who's going to watch. And yeah, I think the military stuff. And I also think, like you said, that his outfit is very nondescript. I do feel like he's like very, like he is old fashioned in a way.
It is old fashioned. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so it made me wonder if, you know, so this guy that he's talking to could, you know, have some delusions and, you know, maybe has some sort of like schizophrenia diagnosis or something, and is recounting the story of, you know, having imagined that he was fighting in World War One, and that is being used here in this show as kind of a contrast to the like actual time traveling Harper that is happening. Or is this guy not delusional, was in the war, like somehow Harper has brought him to the present, but people think he is because he thinks that he fought in the war and is there kind of misdiagnosed. There's a lot of different things that could be happening. And I don't yeah. know that we can narrow down any of it.
If you're also looking to just like chat with, you know, he's telling him like, you know, Leo's like, are you here to see Julia? Like, she's not my girl. Like, not yet. Like, if you're going to like, kind of like, tell anybody, is it yeah somebody like who's like in some sort of patient center mm-hmm. where like are they very believable mm-hmm. if they tell somebody, and you know, you can, and maybe you can manipulate them in a way of like, you don't tell anybody about this stuff we're talking about, you know, but I mean, you know, a way for him to like talk about all of this stuff perhaps
yeah.
I don't
yeah,
know.
It seemed like he was like getting actually, my notes are not clear enough for me to remember, but it's like, it seemed like they were rehearsing details of a story to get it right. So it's like, no, first it was the dogs that bark, then we would smell it, then the rest. Like, it seems like they were going over the details of a story to make sure that they got it right. And I don't know, like, if this was for Harper's benefit or for Leo's benefit. Yeah.
And also, if there is this thing with time, listen, I know you're not a fan of paradoxical time travel, but if you go back into every time this is a dark bingo, everything always has to happen again. So if you like, especially this happens a lot when like you see yourself, that if you see yourself, then you have to like, that cycle will keep repeating. So if he's been doing this like multiple, is there some weird way where he does this like multiple times? If he's, because like Leo's saying like, I'll stop if I've told you this one before.
Right.
Implying that like, they've had this conversation, like he told him stories before, and perhaps that's something that like Leo is inciting from like Harper, that like, yeah, I've told you this story before. Either like multiple times because he comes to see him all the time, or like, is he almost like deja vu, if that makes mm-hmm, sense, of like mm-hmm. yeah, we keep doing this, like you keep like time traveling to me, and I have to, you know, we live the same thing over and over again. I don't know. Anyway, so Julia signs in, Harper being a total creep, just staring at her. He offers her a coffee and she declines. And it's like, are you visiting someone you serve with? Which is interesting. And he giggles and he's like, yeah, it takes training for men to match their buttons to their buckle. Harper goes to touch her hair. Do not touch me.
Yeah, and he says to her, he's like, you shouldn't wear your hair like that, not at work. And like,
oh, I hated this so much.
This was, again, Melissa, like you called this out in this scene where he interacts with Jenny in the planetarium. And this, again, was like this other scene where Julia's being polite and cordial and he's harassing her and he continues to escalate until he crosses a line and actually like touches her, invades her personal space, and she like reacts immediately. She's like, you know, don't touch me, and then she just walks off to leave to meet her client.
Reaction was actually so much that I wondered for a moment if it was like almost subconscious, right? Like it felt like such a switch there that she was kind of being polite and kind of humoring this conversation to very suddenly like set that boundary, that I was like, oh, I wonder if she, even if she doesn't remember any interaction with this person before, she knows, and there is like this very quick reaction there on some sort of like subconscious level, as well as just the like, don't touch people.
You don't know them. Again, we talked last week about like this idea that like, you know, the book comes sort of before Me Too, it, like really becomes sort of the mainstream. This episode really felt like, yeah, this is some of the stuff they're trying to, he is just being awful. And then there's some stuff with Kirby later that I think feels like very like, again, the idea of like mapping on like real life in onto this like science fiction time travel thriller.
I really want to get to that with like the way that Kirby is treated by the police and even like the press, like that was really, really that really spoke to that, I think, Grace.
So she chats with one of her clients. She gets to be there because she's half an hour early. And then a little bit later she's walking home, and as she's walking home, she already sees that her door is open. She checks her voicemails and she calls out for her dad, apologizes that she's late because she's with a client. And it looks like they're unpacking boxes and that they've just moved. They've moved in. But she finds a Polaroid in with one of the pots. The dad's like, yeah, you didn't see. She's like, where's this from? Like, I've never been here. It's like, well, you didn't seem happy to be there.
There were two moments in this, because there's the music where he's like, oh, I've played this for you before. And she's like, oh, I don't remember. And then there's this photo where she's like, oh, I don't like know what this is from. And so it did feel to me like maybe her memories are being tampered with or affected in some way.
Like, she might be having some of the experiences that we see Kirby having. Like, this picture, like, she clearly doesn't remember the picture being taken. Like, when her dad says, oh, that looks like it's the North Shore, she says she never goes there. And, like, we're going
to see. And that stood out to me, too, of, like, is she, subconsciously avoiding it? Like, is there, because a bad thing happened to her there that she doesn't remember?
And is the North Shore where Kirby's assault happened as well?
It was like North Beach, so North probably Beach.
Yeah, that seems like the same.
Looks like if you search beach, they seem to be in the same area.
So there's like just some evidence that there's things, and we'll see more Polaroid pictures that like Julia doesn't recognize, like how they could have been taken. And so again, indications that time is being messed with and that she might be having similar experiences to what Kirby is having. And then, so yeah, this was, it does seem like the whole family moves into this house, right? That this isn't just Julia's house.
Yes, that the dad's, because he's like, I've made some executive decisions as to like where stuff is going to go. It's a big deal. Where do you put the cutlery?
The
bowls? You know,
and that's the family home that we'll see like later in the 1992 timeline. Also, that's the family home.
It's funny because the picture immediately was not like, oh, this is what's happening to Kirby. I mean, because like the line, like, yeah, you didn't look happy to be there, to me was like, oh, he is going to like kidnap her and take her there in the future, take a picture of her, and then now he's time traveled back to leave the picture of her from the future in a place where she can.
Right.
Yeah, very possible.
Was my reading rather than if her, this is something that she has done. But I think both are totally plausible. I think as soon as you like, it could be this the exact same stuff that's happening to Kirby. Like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kirby cutting out articles from the paper. She's looking for clips on her assault. Dan is looking for clips on her assault, and there's like none of them. And mm-hmm. she's like, are you still working on Madrigal? And she says, yeah, there won't be much to pull. Dan asks if he can look at the police report. And Kirby immediately is like, oh, you must have found something with like Julia. Mm-hmm. And Dan starts to like sort of have this talk with her. Like, this is going to be a little bit problematic that you're both the source and you work for the paper. I need to be able to verify your information. And asks again about like, did he leave something inside of you?
Yeah, I found this has come up a few times, I think, for Kirby in these conversations where like she has this really strong reaction to this suggestion that maybe her recall of events isn't perfect. Like she says, oh, so you think I'm lying? Mm-hmm. And there's been other times that I'm not pulling mm-hmm. up right now, but it's like where someone has kind of implied like maybe, you know, you don't have like a great memory of this and has kind of commented on that. And she gets very defensive about that. And I think like understandably so, when I think a part of her knows that maybe she can't trust her own memories around that because she can't trust her own memories of anything that has happened since then. But it is just, it's clearly this like point of contention for her that she is upset about.
And it does, and I also do think it reflects though, like she does feel a lot of certainty around what happened to her. And that is like her true north. It's like, I don't know whether I live with my mom or I live with my husband. Like, I don't know whether my desk is on the left side of the room or the right side of the room, but like, I know that this happened to me. And so it's like, if when people doubt her and try to take that from her, that it really is like kind of threatening her, like the one thing about her that she actually feels like she has a good sense of, like she has a solid sense of.
So I think this upcoming scene, I think it's a very powerful one. I think before we get into it, let's take a quick commercial break and then we will be right back.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
We are back. And I think this is the scene. This is the scene I was referencing earlier, Amanda, where like she takes him to the laundromat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Kirby and Dan are at the laundromat and she says, you know, he this is what he left a matchbook inside of me from the Be Happy bar, and it has this address on it. And Dan, who I think we're going to get some more clues about Dan, Dan's like, oh yeah, this must have been a bar. This would be a great place for a bar.
Yeah, he seems really enthusiastic about that. All I have to say is happy bees.
Happy bees.
Happy bar. The bee happy bar. Oh, do you think it's
instead bee? Of funny, the funny bees the bee were funny the bee bar happy bar.
The bee happy bar. But no, Kirby checked the records and there's never been a bar at this address. And this is when Dan, you know, shows her like, oh yeah, well, this is what we found inside Julia. This is the chemical box. And this is when Dan says, like, well, like, this gets back to this idea. It's like, I, you need to be able to verify with me what happened. Like, I need to be able to trust your report. So walk me through what happened. And she starts to give the details. She was by North Avenue Beach. She was walking her dog. They were alone. And, you know, Dan's trying to get some corroborating evidence. Like, were you living with Marcus back then? Can he, like, vouch that you left the house at this time and came back at this time? And, like, these are standard things for a reporter or an investigator to want to know. But she has no idea whether she was married to Marcus then.
Yeah, so she's very defensive and, like, avoid, like, why does that matter? And it's like, well, because, like, yeah, and he wasn't there. I was alone. Like, it again feels very rehearsed, her like way of answering these questions. Like, I was alone. I was walking my dog by the beach. Like, these are things that she has said over and over and over again. And it's like, this is the last time I think that she can think of her memories as being reliable, whether they are or not at this point. Mm-hmm. And so it very much feels like she's clinging to this moment of like, no, I know what happened. This is it. Like, I have said this over and over again to the point that I've memorized this moment. This like very impactful, emotionally charged moment, which we know does things to your memory. And so, yeah, I think it was just, I thought this whole scene was very interesting, the way that she was like very insistent, like, no, I know what happened.
Yeah.
And after, like, she gets asked about like her mom, like, you don't know if your mom is local or not. Like, you don't know. And he's like, these are very basic questions. And she's like, for you, like, you know, they're not basic for me, not today. Just phenomenal acting from Elizabeth Moss, I gotta say. Yeah,
that's really powerful. And like, again, this is one of those things, like, you can sort of read this line as, you know, like, it's not basic for her because she lives in this constantly shifting reality with separate timelines and time travel that we don't even understand yet. Or you can also say it's not basic for me because talking about this event at all is not, you know, it's not a basic thing to recall these details. So I think, again, this is like one of those lines that can be read in both of those ways. And, you know, and he says, it's okay. Like, I don't need all the answers now. And she says she just doesn't want to get it wrong. So, you know, they're going to end up leave the laundromat and she's going to try to corroborate this. But like, I also think it's interesting, like, we're getting this as a bit of Kirby's personality, but I think that this is also like her adaptive style. Is she is sort of like vague and withholding and sarcastic and like, you know, it's like, I didn't say I was helping Birdie, you did, or like, you know, like she says, like, oh, why does it matter if I was married? He wasn't there. Like, so it's like, that's a little bit of like, seems like she's but like it works for her because she doesn't always know what to say because her reality is shifting.
The way this maps on to real life situations for me is the way in which women so often get like, people say, well, you went back to him or you texted him, you know, so there are details about the story that people presume poke holes and are able to dismiss the fact that a woman was abused. And to me, that's the parallel here of like her, you know, it's, you know, within the framework of this like science fiction story that she does not have her memory, that she, you know, she can't trust what she knows. But I feel like the way he's like, I need you to tell me everything. And then she is not willing to say everything because of the way, for me, the real life metaphor is the way that people will be like, you know, that abuse stories are often so much more complex. And there are many ways in which like women don't report abuse, or they will go back to the people, or they will message them, you know, because that's the way abuse works. Like, you often are like, you know, have loved that person at some point.
And these details get used against you. So like, if you give that detail, it's like, oh, your mom is local. Why didn't you call your mom? Like, why didn't you go to your mom? Like, oh, like, why did you do? Oh, if Marcus was there, why didn't you call him? It's like, any of these things can end up being used to cast doubt on the validity of the story. So like, to have the sort of metaphor of that be Kirby's situation, I think is really powerful.
Yeah, there's a statistic that I think it's something like it takes on average like 6 attempts to leave before you can like leave a domestic abuse situation. Like it's not the exception by any means that it, you know, it takes a lot. It's really hard and can take a few times before it's possible, if it is at all. And it's, you know, there's a lot of really good reasons why it's really, really hard. And so, it's really interesting to see this all being kind of dissected in this way, and Kirby trying to like advocate for herself in these times when she's talking about like, I don't want to talk about this, I can't, whatever. And then being pushed and then having to, you know, trying to walk those lines and set those boundaries, and but also still wanting to get to the bottom of what happened and needing help to do that. It's really interesting.
So they head to the well. It's like, is there a cover? You make donations inside. There's gospel music. And she's looking at the pamphlet. It's nothing really here. And then she hears her mother singing. And her mother sings. They finish the song. And then she sees Kirby. She's like, oh, it's my daughter. And like, everybody group hugs her. So uncomfortable. Yeah.
My daughter. And she starts like, right, Heavenly Father, thank you for bringing my daughter back. And like everybody's like gathering around. So this is like a very different Rachel in this timeline. Like, she's not, you know, getting bumped by Jesus Lizard at 3 a.m. at a bar. I found a new Jesus Lizard.
Kirby's just looking to get her hospital records and some photos. They go back to Rachel's apartment, it seems like. She gives Kirby this like photo album. It's like, yeah, not the
vacations at the beach, mom.
Read the room, Rachel. She needs the photos and the journals from after the hospital. Why do you need all this? She's finding that like, there's some links to, you know, Julia's case, and it might be the same person. And her mom's like, you're helping? Like, why are you helping? Who's making you do this? She does check the old suitcase and finds what she was looking for. I feel like even though she's like, at the Christian, you know, gospel group, she does name drop the effigies. She's like, remember, this is when I opened for the effigies. Yeah.
So you get the feeling that this is like probably like, this was like the same Rachel, right, who had this career as like, in like a rock group. And then at some point she found Jesus. Who knows if this like coincided with whatever happened to Kirby, like if that was part of her like religious awakening. But like, you know, up until like not, I mean, in the timeline of the show, like you have to think that this would have been like not more than 5-10 years like before the assault, right? Because like Kirby,
the effigies are in the 80s
or in the 80s and 90s. So you know, and Kirby, and we see Kirby in this VHS recording like getting up on stage and singing with her mom, and they have like a sweet mother-daughter moment, just kind of laughing and reminiscing about this. And Kirby's like, well, why don't we talk anymore, mom? And she's like, well, that was your call, but you're invited to come to services at any time.
And this might be the first Elizabeth Moss smile in the show so far. And I was like, oh, look at that. It's very nice. I was like, let's capture that.
Yeah.
How do we fix that? Yeah.
She smiled when Marcus took her picture.
True. Yeah. Okay. Yes. That's right. Mm-hmm. I think this is the guy that Julia had was talking to when she arrived, like
her residential facility.
It's like never seen any radium. She never talked about herself, and she didn't know to be scared until it was too late. So he's basically saying that like he used to walk her out to the car. She definitely felt like she was being stalked, and she changed a few weeks before she stopped coming. That's almost falling her, and he calls her a diamond of the rarest kind.
We get from Julia, like I feel like she seems amazing. Like she, and you sort of get the impression that she was like really, really tough, like, you know, and really compassionate and great at her job, and that something shifted in the, you know, in the lead up to, you know, this event when she was being stalked. And that was when, you know, when she became fearful and started asking to be walked to her car.
Yeah, this did make me think of that moment where, you know, she was earlier when he went to touch her hair and she was just like, don't touch my hair. Like it was a very like firm boundary line. And this was the woman to me who could not kick a linebacker.
Right.
And then it was like the person that she became as a result of this. And I think it was just kind of very important to think that like this, even just like stalking and that, like, it's not harmless. It's not that it can like rob you of your sense of safety and like just how much like how detrimental that was to her before the like actual murder. Like it's
So Dan takes this to Linsky, the guy who was on Kirby's case before, and is like, did Julie ever make any reports of stalking? He won't comment. And Linsky starts asking, like, what this second note, Dan asks, like, what about the second victim? And it's like, you have the wrong suspect. This is where Linsky drops Kirby's name, which is Sharon Leeds. That's Kirby. If you write a story based off of what she says, you're going to have to write a retraction. Dan's pointing out like the wounds are similar. But this is where Linsky drops it. Like Kirby had no memory post assault. And then a few months later, she broke down. She was admitted. They brought her in, but she blanked on the suspect. And this is where he's like, yeah, but see, maybe she connected with the victim in some way. Linsky is sure that he says that Pavel was Julia's stalker. So
yeah, and so I mean, this detective here, like, I could not hate this guy more. Like the freaking worst. Like, so I mean, he's completely dismissive, and like, you know, villainizing of Kirby as if there's like anything suspicious about her behavior. Oh, like, oh, I'm sorry, like you have a freaking PhD in clinical psychology, so you know exactly how assault victims are supposed to report. Like, it seems like he has so much blame and contempt for her for not cooperating with his investigation in a way that led to a conviction, that he's, you know, and the fact that she came back and couldn't ID a victim, it's just like, well, maybe it wasn't the guy. Like she said, the fact that he's incredulous, like, yeah, how is she supposed to see him if he came up behind her? Like, you want, like, it's just the fact that she hasn't performed for the police in the way that they want means that he completely invalidates her, and then also, you know, disparages her to Dan and acts like, you know, there's no reason to follow up on this at all. So, yeah, I really thought that this Detective Linsky revealed himself to be a total a-hole.
Yeah. And it's interesting that later on we'll hear from Kirby where she says, like, I was on pain meds. Like they said they'd come back. They never did. Like clearly we're getting the other side of that story there of like why there isn't any sort of kind of coherent testimony from this, from her. The other thing that I thought was kind of interesting in this, though, is we are starting to see there are elements here where, like, Dan is fudging the truth a little bit. Like, he talks about that Kirby's wounds are consistent with Julia's. The medical examiner confirmed it. Like, he explicitly did not earlier in this episode. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's been a couple other situations like that where he's sort of, like, said a thing that is, like, almost true but not quite true. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that like Dan is the most reliable.
I mean, Dan is gonna have some moments, and as this episode goes on,
yeah,
too. But this was another example where I was thinking, like, you know, Dan says that people like him. And I was like, I don't think Detective Linsky likes you, Dan.
Yeah, but who cares if Detective Linsky likes you?
He's a jerk.
I mean, I had a moment on the Heartstopper podcast where I said something so confidently and then immediately everyone was like, that was wrong. So I do think, though, it proves my point that, like, confidence is key. And this guy just being like, read up on your source before you start, like, speculating. He just says it with confidence, right? Like, it's like, yeah, she blew the case. She has no memory. Like, we're not going to don't believe her. She's a bad source. He's just saying this stuff so confidently. And yeah, he probably, like, for most people it works, just not probably our main protagonist of the show. So Kirby comes home, sees Marcus. Her mom had called. This is where Marcus is like, yeah, you can kind of mess up my birthday. You went to go see your mom for the first time in a few months. Like, something's definitely up. And I can, like, Marcus, he's like, do you want to tell me what's up? And she's like, no. He's like, all right, finish your beer. We won't talk about it. That's fine. All good.
Yeah, he seems to be, like, like, very patient. He seems to be, you know, she's going to later call him kind. And it's interesting because, like, you do wonder, like, we don't know what the true timeline is, right? Like, we don't know if Kirby is married to Marcus or is, you know, single and living with her mom. Like, we don't know which of those timelines is true. But you wonder, like, in a timeline where Kirby is married to Marcus, like, this is probably something that happens from time to time, that she is distant and confused and messes things up. So you wonder about, like, how that plays into the history of their relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too, actually, that, like, this can't have been, it's not, as far as we know, it's not the situation where Kirby suddenly appears in this timeline where she's married to Marcus and, like, everything has been quote unquote normal up till that point, right? Like, it's probably a situation where the assault still happened in this timeline. She just dealt with it differently, got help she needed. I don't know. Like, and,
well, like, mom knows about the assault, like, you know, like, so it did happen. Like, this mom that, like the church lady mom knows about the assault. So it did happen. Yeah. So it's interesting to think about, like, what in those different realities, like, the other characters' impressions are of, like, how she's dealt with it and how she's processed it.
Yeah. And so this, you know, this probably isn't the first time maybe that she's come home without all the stuff, you know. He's kind of like, we wrote a list. Like, it seems like maybe, you know, that was potentially a strategy that they had to try to, like, avoid these situations when they happen. And yeah, maybe this is something that has happened before. And yeah.
I'm interested in, are there infinite, you know, timelines, or are they finite? So is there a world where she will, you know, will she go back to the moment where she's like, she's living with her mom and she's ready to move, you know, she's planning to move out, you know, and she has a dog. Does she come back to this moment where she's with Marcus at some point if we ever leave that, or whether
mom dog, mom cat, mom fish, mom
So whether, yeah, does she relive some of these even though she never remembers being there, or whether it will there's like constant change. Who knows? So we're back at Julia's house. She hears, like, you know, rocks being thrown at the window, pebbles being thrown at the window. Nobody's there, but she does find the same Polaroid she found in the pot in her closet. She heads downstairs. She finds another Polaroid, and she runs into the kitchen to grab a knife and finds a Polaroid of her in the exact position that she's in. Super creepy. Yeah. The telephone rings, and Harper's like, you don't need that. I'm not in the house. So how'd you get in? You let me in. You did know me. You will know me. When he closes his eyes, he doesn't know where his memories are from anymore. So and then he asks her, can you remember the future? It seems like he's having memory problems as well. The radium.
No, like, legitimately, I think this, you know, eventually we'll skip ahead to see him, like, in bed with radium. And it did make me think that, like, he is susceptible. And the scene with the mug and the teacup, like, it seems like maybe he is susceptible to the same thing that these women are dealing with as well, which I thought was
interesting and raises many more questions about the timeline of all of this and what's going on.
Yeah, this scene, this is just like kind of like a meta comment. Like, this is all like very evocative to like woman alone in the house horror movies. You know, she's like in the dark going down the, you know, the stairs, running to the phone, the call is coming from inside the house, sort of like all of the tropey stuff. And like, I'm like very much enjoying the show. I think it's very well done. I think it's more than just this, but I did have a moment. I was watching this with my husband. I'm like, people never get sick of just terrified women. And so like, it's like, there's like this terrified women fetish in film and television that is just like, I don't need to see terrified women. I mean, we're obviously watching
watching an entire show.
It's very much that, but like, for whatever reason, it was like this scene of Julia, like, at the phone holding the box cutter, like with the horror tropes, that I was like, this is really like leaning into all of that.
So I did a little search of radium, and one of the first images that comes up was clocks, and I was like, why clocks? So apparently radiums were heavily used. People were fascinated by it being glow in the dark, and so
I didn't know
people
this and forgot this. So yeah, this is vintage, a great metaphor here.
Vintage clocks are like known for being filled with radium.
Wow.
And the people who used to make clocks and do all that stuff were typically, radium dials were typically painted by young women who used to point their brushes by licking and shaping the bristles prior to painting the fine lines and numbers on the dials. So like, yeah, there's a lot. I feel like I've covered a whole, I pulled out a thread.
That's a lot. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. There's a lot there.
Which, you know, the whole time, that makes total, not total sense. There's still a lot to like to get from point A to point B.
I think that there's like, at the very least, a metaphor here, if not more to that. Yeah, I think that's really interesting.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. So we jump back. Dan goes to meet Kirby. He's like, I need to talk to you. He's like, I need to know about Sharon Leeds. And also, I just think, is it a pun? Sharon Leeds. I'm sharing.
They are Sharon Leeds.
They are sharing Leeds with each other. Who is?
It's like if this was written by Grace.
Yeah,
that's right.
Who is Sharon Leeds? I got Leeds. Who's Sharon Leeds?
Who's Sharon Leeds? Yeah, like if people would be so sick of me if I worked in a detective's office. Yeah, he's like, I like to get my source's name right. And he says, call it professional pride. He pulled her employment application, and she had said that she had some credentials that perhaps she did not have. She says she didn't lie to get the job. Sharon Leeds lied to get the job.
Well, do we know that she lied, or do we know that he's saying, like, this is what your application said. Is that true? Like,
later she'll say she wanted to be a journalist, right? So, like, there is a world in which she did go to those places.
This was my understanding of this, was that she did go to U of I. She did used to work at the Tribune. She used to like live close to the Tribune because she was working there and like wanting to become a journalist. That the only thing that she lied about was her name here, was sort of my understanding. But yeah, it's like Dan is very like upset that he hasn't, you know, been given all of the information. And this is one of those moments where I was like, I don't know that you needed to have.
But to be fair to Dan, like, just to give Dan the benefit of the doubt, like, this kind of dual relationship, like, with a source and a colleague is, like, is very, like, there's no good way to navigate it, right? It's almost like they shouldn't be doing this together at all. But, like, so that's where I would say that you can criticize Dan, even though, like, I think that his motives are mostly good, but it's, like, you know, he does have his like professional responsibilities as a journalist to get this information. And the fact that she is a colleague and they're co-investigating, he's not just a source, like he's inviting her to co-investigate with him. And like, that is like an essentially problematic relationship where there are going to be conflicts of interest for Kirby and for Dan. So like, I do think, to be fair to him, it's like he's acknowledging that this is a difficult situation where he can't just like behave friend to friend or colleague to colleague with Kirby here.
So this is, they sit down and chat. This is where we get the other half of what Linsky is saying. Like, she's saying, you know, like, yeah, I, you know, I was on pain meds. They did a write-up. It was light. They said they would come back. Dan's like asking, okay, so what is missing from the story? One of the things that she's saying is like, she's not sure how no one else saw it. In the report, there's no witnesses. And she's like, yeah, there were people and then there just weren't. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that felt just like sad to me. It feels like, you know, bystander, we're like, people just, is that the read we get, that like people saw something might be happening and just turn?
I definitely thought it was more supernatural in some way, because at the party when he's talking to Dan, he says something along the lines of like, no one's here, even though they're like surrounded by people. And it was like, so there's definitely the possibility that it is kind of this metaphor of like, no one's paying attention to you. Like, people are too busy with their own lives.
Which like does famously happen with the bystander effect. Sure. I mean, the Kitty Genevieve story is like what inspired that line of research, a woman being assaulted in a crowded place and yelling for help and nobody coming to help her. But it did seem like there was something about this story where you're like, okay, maybe reality shifted and the people went away.
Oh, now I'm like, oh, he definitely time traveled her. Definitely, like that makes so much sense that he would time travel to a place where he can get away with it, right?
That makes sense. So that was kind of my idea, was that they kind of shifted to a different time where they were suddenly alone, but it is kind of this weird
in the future. They went to, you know, there's the happy bar. Yeah. She has an artifact that we think is like probably from the future. Right. Like if there was never a Be Happy bar there, but it's a great location, then there probably will be.
Oh, and from the future. I was thinking from like an alternate timeline.
No, I think the Be Happy bar, the reason they're like, there's never been a dress here, is because it hasn't been there yet. It will be there. It will become a spot. And that's the same thing with like the radium, right? Like the tin can, right? Like he's leaving it as this like a clue. Thinking he'll never get caught, right? Because this is his like the way to like have fun with it, that he's like, you know, I think he time travels to 1950 to bring her, you know, whatever. Maybe that's also part of it. He goes time travels whichever direction and then comes back, you know, that like the thrill of potentially being like, why would he leave it in 1950? Because I don't know. Anyway, so they're chatting about that, and then Dan brings up this line of like, did you ever have any break-ins? And she's like, I always knew something was off, like someone was here and had just left. And he says that like, Julie was being stalked. She filed reports. And this worker is like, was he watching me? Like, did he know me? And asked, can you please not tell anyone in the office that she is a source? It's terrifying. The feeling that she knows that someone was in her apartment.
Yeah. And she portrays this really well, that like it sort of sinks in that she feels like, oh, like I was being watched, which like definitely adds a whole other layer of horror to what she's experienced. Like this idea that like it was premeditated and she was, and like all of her feelings that something was off were probably true.
Mm-hmm. Go to visit Julia's dad. They go to the house. Dan had like scheduled an interview, but there are a ton of journalists outside. So Julia's dad is not willing to chat with anybody. He's had too much. But on the ride over, there's like a ton of junk in Dan's car. We find out he has a kid.
Are there beer cans too?
Was definitely like an empty alcohol bottle of some kind.
So this scene, certainly like as we like progress here, like Dan certainly seems drunk.
This is the dark side of Dan. Like, I don't know if he's drunk in the car here, but he's definitely going to get loaded at this wake that they go to, where he's on assignment. We find out that he has a kid.
What does she hold up in this car? I couldn't figure it out.
It's like a Game Boy cartridge.
It was
okay. I like paused and rewound this a few times.
Are you
and, like,
too young? Are you too young for this, Melissa?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. I'm older than Grace, but I don't know. I was watching this on like half of my laptop screen and was struggling to be like, what is this?
It's like a Game Boy cartridge. And he says, she's like, do you have kids? And he's like, one. And she's like, that's enough. That counts as that
counts. This whole scene was pretty funny, actually.
This was hilarious, I thought. I have a 12-year-old. He really has his shit together more than I do. And she says, you'll get there.
You'll get there.
Which I thought was really, was really funny, was delivered really well. And C says, you know, are you and Marcus thinking of kids? And she's like, well, we haven't talked about it.
Yeah. In the last 24 hours that I've known I was married to him, we haven't brought it up.
And then she asks Dan, like, oh, he shot for you. What do you think of him? And he's like, your husband? You haven't formed your own opinion yet?
Yeah, which I thought was very funny.
But then they get super real here.
I love that he's
the honesty to Kirby, yeah.
Yeah. She says, I think he's kind. And he just says, yeah, that's not my read.
Yeah. He's a martyr, all decency, but no compassion. She says, well, you're not married. And he says, nope, but I'm highly eligible.
Boy, that all decency, no compassion. He's a martyr to his wife. That's bold.
That's first of all, he has formed a very specific opinion. Yeah. Like that, he had that ready. That was like right off the dome. And he had no hesitancy to let Kirby know that. Do we think he's like, is this like coming on to her at all?
Highly eligible. Like it's kind of like, you know, flirty, cheeky, I think a little bit. I kind of hope that's not where the show is going, but I mean, what show does not do the too many characters?
Yeah. Prove me wrong, television.
I hope not. No.
Yeah.
Let's say it's not.
Okay. Yeah. They head to the house, you know, and like, well, can't you like, you know, we'll talk to him when everyone leaves. He's like, no, I can't push him. And says, maybe the family made a statement. So he goes and enjoys some drinks. She's going to chat with some of the journalists. And bold of Kirby, she heads back down the alleyway, sees the family. He's like, I worked with her. We were friends. And then heads inside. It takes like, off her
by
earrings.
The way, I borrowed these earrings from her. It's a pretty good cover. Yeah.
Yeah. Just returning them and heads through the house, walks through the house. Heads upstairs, goes into Julia's room and is sort of snooping around and looking through the journals and the tapes. So I definitely thought she was getting caught here. Like the fake out of like suspense. And then it just turns out to be like the father being like, what the hell are you doing in here?
A couple things I want to note here. Like there's a woman giving a statement in Spanish to a television reporter about Julia was baptized at this church and we finally get to bury her there. I think that that's Julia's mom. Even though she hasn't been referenced before, but then the young man who directs her to where to put the earrings, it calls that woman Tia. So I think that that might be the cousin who identified her, like not that that necessarily is going to be, but I think that and this is the same kitchen, obviously, where we saw the family unpacking earlier.
I thought it was interesting that we never saw the dad in this scene, right?
No. We saw him slam the door at Dan.
Right. Yeah, I kept expecting like a run-in with him that never happened, and I wondered if that was notable in some way, but maybe not. Maybe it's just there were other things going on.
I thought we were going to get like that she gets caught, but it's by him and not, you know, whatever. But so Dan's outside. He's looking
getting sloppy.
Very quickly. I will, you know, but I get, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that was very fast.
I do think this is like a, you know, a follow up to the last, you know, it's implied like he meets him at the bar. He's having, you know, he does have a drink and talking about that he had like, you know, he did go for treatment. But he does seem to be drinking. And he sees this man walking around and he says, hey, I'll take your statement if you have one. Mm-hmm. And it's Harper. It says, how do you know I'm not a reporter? He says, well, who are you with? He says, the Daily News. Oh, really? You know, you can take your time with the deadline. They've been out of print for 10 years. He's like, yeah, I would bet not many people know that. And so Dan introduces himself. Harper's like, oh yeah, you wrote about Julia. And it's like, he says he lives close. He says they made an arrest, but they'll see if it sticks. And Dan gives him his business card. And Harper's like, oh, do you think it's someone else? And Dan sort of gives himself away, probably because he's drunk, and sort of smiles. And he's like, you're not very good at this. And he says, you know, you're not very good at your job. And he's like, yeah, talking to people like you is what the job is. And that's why everyone else is gone.
So I took this line as like all the press has left.
Yes.
Not that everybody at the party was gone, that like all the press has left at this point. So there's no more story there. So that Yeah, so this is like, and again, this is like a scene where like Dan is kind of being like, you know, people like Dan. I don't know if people like Dan as much as he thinks that people like him. He's being like, but you see this kind of like smarmy contentiousness play out between Dan and Harper in the scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's definitely drunk. So I feel like, yeah he's like giving his game away. Do we like this?
I was funny.
Yeah, go ahead.
But the part of this that I thought was funny was, I think Dan is the only person that we've seen interact with Harper and not like have major creep vibes. Like I thought it was, and so I thought it was just this interesting dynamic of, I think you see it a lot in real life where people will like know someone who then is like accused of sexual assault or whatever. And it's like, oh, well, I never got that vibe or no, he's not like that or whatever. And it's like so often, like, you don't know if you're not the victim, like you don't, you might not be getting those vibes from somebody and you might have no idea. And I just, I just thought it was really interesting that they're having this whole conversation and Dan seems just like to be like enjoying himself. And he's the first person that we've seen interact with him in that way and not immediately kind of get their guard up.
I mean, he does spot him.
Dan is like, on to him. Like, and I'm hoping he is. Like, I'm really hoping that he's already clocked this because, like, later we are going to hear a tape with Harper's voice. And I was like, oh, Dan's heard Harper's voice. Mm-hmm. Like, Dan, you can do this. And he doesn't. But I'm hoping that this is, like, going to register to Dan.
But Dan's drunk, right? So I think this is, you know, it is going to be the story, I think, too, that, like, he's sort of struggling and perhaps as, like, frustratingly so as Kirby is, like, picking the, you know, putting the pieces together, Dan's gonna like not be able to like do, you know, and he's the one being like, I need you, like I need to be able to verify your information, right? And Dan will be like close to the, you know, he's literally met the guy he's looking for, and sort of in some like is right to be like, hey, you come here, like let me talk to you, you know, like how do you know Julia is like, close, you know, he is sort of asking the right questions, and yet I think it is gonna sort of like slip from his grasp a little bit because he has these substance abuse issues.
Yeah, I mean, Sherlock Holmes had his opium.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I guess it wasn't my read at all. It was that he saw him talking to the reporter and thought something. I don't know. It to me, it the read was that he like knew he didn't belong there, but not necessarily that there was any sort of like negative vibe, but that he thought he was like a nosy neighbor or like some, like somebody like trying to get info for some other reason. I don't know that I just didn't read it that he like thought this guy was bad news.
Well, he did lie to him too. He's like, where do you work? The Daily News.
Yeah, but then he seemed all like chummy and weird about it. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he's drunk.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I don't know.
So this is where Kirby will find the small tape in the jewelry box, which we'll learn is a voicemail tape. That is I don't even think I had voicemail tapes growing up. I think it's before my time.
We definitely, I had them in my like childhood home, definitely the voicemail tapes.
Yeah. So she plays the tape. It's a call to 911 saying someone's in the house, but they're not there right now. Never sees them, but knows that they are there. And then there's another call where the phone rings and he says, you know, the police will be there in 18 minutes. And Kirby immediately, which is, I think this is a great callback from last episode where she's like, yeah, I remember what he called me when you know, he was assaulting me. She immediately recognizes the voice.
Right.
And Harper saying like, yeah, I'm there at every moment there, though everything is that has happened, everything that will happen, I'm with all of you, and hangs up. Kirby takes the tape and heads outside to show it to Dan.
Yeah. All of you.
I took that so metaphorically, like all, but like Kirby's totally right to like when later, like there's more women, there's a bunch more women, which not surprising that the show would be. I mean we get no follow-up on the Genie storyline in this.
Say like seeing this Julia, like the Julia 1990 storyline running alongside the 1992 storyline, made me really much more like on the track of like, we don't really know when that Ginny storyline happened. That could have been anywhere.
Any why.
Anyhow.
What a great segue.
Gosh, we're so good at podcasting.
Best in the biz. Yeah, back in the newsroom, Kirby and Dan are going to play the tape recording for Abby. I cannot find this actress in the IMDb, and I'm like, she's so familiar to me. I'm almost positive that she must have played like some like she must have been on some sitcom that I watched. Like, I have to find out who this actress is. So yeah, if any of our listeners know, let me know. Yeah, so they're going to actually need to go back and get permission from the family to use this tape in any way. You can't just break into people's homes under the name of journalism. And Abby's just like, wow, like I guess the Chicago Police Department didn't look too hard for any exonerating evidence. Surprise, surprise. You know, but why would she have hidden the tape? Like, the editor wants to know. And, you know, Kirby says, like, you know, she knew he was coming, and that was, you know, the best, that was all she could do at that point. And there's like a sweet moment when Abby asks Dan, like, oh, by the way, did you ever like get any more info about that source? And Dan says, yeah, she held up just fine. And Kirby looks like really sort of satisfied and proud that like he seems to be believing her.
Well, I think that's it's a good point you're saying, Melissa, where he sort of says things that are like true and he's not telling the whole truth, right? Like he's saying this thing that is he believes to be true, she held it fine, without telling Abby that like, oh, it's this is the suspect.
She's right here.
Right, yeah. Here, right.
He's like, yeah, I'll tell you later, she's yeah, right here. Yeah.
And so then we get the final scene of the episode. Harper heads home. He lies down on his bed, and we zoom out to see radium on the bed. It was in the form of anything. I kind of thought maybe someone lying next to him, but it didn't seem, I don't know. Yeah.
What did you think, Melissa? I paused there too, and I was like, is this going to be like the form of a body? Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't. Again, this was one of those moments where I had to like pause and rewind, like very quickly cut to credits. And I was like, wait, what is happening? And yeah, it does seem like there is just radium decay in his bed next to him. I was trying to figure out if it was like the outline of a body or what was going on. Like, is it coming because like it's part of him and he lies in this bed? Like, what is it? I don't know. I still have so many questions, but it definitely seemed like radium in his bed. Like, somehow he is connected to the radium, which I think we knew, you know, it being left in the body and all, but that maybe it's affecting him as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder how much radium is like, it seems like radium is going to be like a critical part of the puzzle of like whatever kind of mysterious thing is going on. Like, at first I thought, okay, this is just like a clear signifier of something that was obviously from a different time. So we have like, if the Be Happy bar is the future and the radium is the past. But it seems like this potentially has more significance than the matchbook, unless there's something more we're going to learn about the matchbook. Like, that it doesn't just mark something from a different time, that it might actually be like a critical part of understanding the mechanism of like who this guy is and how he's doing what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he left radium inside of Julia, and then he has radium on his bed.
We don't yet know that like radium is at all directly tied to Kirby's assault, but maybe there's something else that we'll learn about that.
I mean, they would have never looked, right? They would have never looked for it, presumably.
Yeah, I mean, so, she would be being poisoned.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So we don't know how, go ahead.
No, just that, like, to me, I'm sort of interpreting it that these weird, like, time situations, this kind of loose grasp of time and reality is kind of the effect of radium poisoning. But that maybe it is some form, some like alternate isotope that is not actually like also causing like actual poisoning. I don't know.
The other piece of this that is this guy, he knows Kirby, He went back in time and found her as a child. He knows her. He did not kill Harper or Kirby. Kirby lives. You would think that if you had access to time travel and you know, and so what happened? Right. What happened that he chose not to kill Kirby is a question that I have, because if it, whether that's on purpose or by accident, and either of those things is interesting to me in terms of like where the story goes, because everybody else, well, we don't know what happened to Julia. We actually don't know about
it. So I was going to say, I actually think the opposite might be true. I think that Julia's death might have been an accident, and that he doesn't purposefully set out to kill them, because, you know, playing with them and fear and control and manipulation is far more satisfying. Mm. And so, you know, for all we know, Ginny is still alive. Kirby, like, I think Ginny's fate might answer that question a little bit, because I'm thinking that, you know, maybe Julia, there was, you know, an accident there of some kind, and so he had to like figure that out, but that he actually, maybe these various women, maybe most of them are still alive.
I mean, it really is like the taking the wings off of the bee, right? He's like, first we find the shine and then we take it away. And so it's like, we see Kirby living as like a shadow of herself. Like, there were the remarks about how Julia had changed. It's like her shot. She was a diamond. Like, he literally calls her like the rarest kind of diamond, and he took away her shine.
Yeah, that.
So like, you're right. Like, we're making assumptions about what happened with Ginny, but maybe it's like his aim to just sort of rob these women of like what it is that makes them them.
It's interesting. And I mean, there is the thing too, where a lot of like you change their motives, sort of change, you know, as they get more whatever, you know, as things to, you know, they're not their motives to change, but like the outcome of what they are doing sometimes can change, whether things like sort of escalate. Because there's a world where it's like, if he can time travel, he can kind of have both. He can, you know,
he can have a timeline where Kirby died, a timeline where Julia's still alive.
I do like the idea that like I don't like the idea that there are other women out there, but the idea, like, again, I feel like that could be a very powerful, again, if this is a Me Too analogy of sort of Kirby finding other women who have the same story, and it's like sort of the power of potentially them coming forward and being able to tell their story, that would, you know, help, you know, them find Harper and figure it out, could be very powerful, rather than Kirby being the one person who like managed to survive out of all of them. But yeah, we'll see. I have lighter news. I found the actress, if you want to. Erica Alexander. She was in Get Out, is her biggest role, I would say, but also in Living Single and some other stuff.
I know her from Living Single. I've seen Get Out, but she just lived in my brain in such a way where I'm like, I know I watched you every week on television when I was like 11 years old. It's like, I that was the file. I just couldn't read what it. Okay, thank you.
Well, the other one she was in a bunch of, which I presume is not the show you watch, which is Tim Allen's Last Man Standing. I presumed that was not
that
one.
I
missed that one. All right, well, that is episode 2, Evergreen. We'll be back in a few days time with episode 3, Overnight is the name of the episode, and then we're caught up with everybody else, and nobody could spoil us about anything, and we could even go on
to like the book that exists about the story.
Forgot about that. Okay, so we can't read it.
But like, please don't spoil us about the book.
Yeah. Listen, where can people find you? What are you up to?
So follow me on Twitter, MelissaW28. I podcast on the Patreon feed for YA with Kevin Mahadeo and Brooklyn Zed. We're on a bit of a pause, but next week we will come back with our coverage of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, kind of continuing on that coverage there in the Patreon feed. I think I already said that. It's been a long day, y'all. And so also over on twitch.tv/DMPhilly for Dragonfly D&D in Space, as well as the Humble Year Show. Grace and I are doing another episode of that in a couple weeks. So check it out.
What about you, Amanda?
You can find me on Twitter, where I'm at Dr. Amanda R. That's Dr. Amanda R.
And I'm on Twitter at Hi From Grace. Got lots of stuff going on. Follow me on Twitter. It is a wonderful time to become a patron because this has this podcast listening. You're probably listening to it on at least the first of the month, if not a few days in. So great time to support the arts. Patreon.com/postshowrecaps. Listen to YA. Lots of other bonus Patreon pods. A wonderful Discord community and so much more. So a wonderful time. We'll be back in a few days' time with our next episode recap. Until then, bye-bye.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.